This is the second part of the second class, and I'm going to talk about 1951 to 1964. I'm going to get that started here. So the Conservative government in 1951, at this point everybody is pleasantly surprised, because I've already explained to you the welfare state, which is tremendously popular. But I've also, so obviously the Conservative Party managed to convince the electorate that they weren't going to destroy the welfare state. That's how they won. But also, everybody has a pleasant surprise because people were not really expecting the economy to be doing well. In the 1930s, the economy is a disaster. Massive unemployment, massive poverty, massive insecurity. Then you have a war, which costs billions and billions and billions of pounds. And so people imagined the situation afterwards will be extremely bad. And it wasn't. There was an economic boom. It was easy for companies to make profits. And when it's easy for companies to make profits, the bosses don't mind. Oh, well, we can raise your wages. It doesn't matter. If the economy is going well, our company is going well, we're making more money every year. Okay, well, we'll raise your wages a bit. It's not so important. Okay, we'll pay a bit more taxes so we can have free hospitals. It doesn't matter. Yeah. When the economy is going very well and companies make profit easily, they're not so hard on stopping anything from becoming more expensive. Okay, so when the Conservatives won the election in 1951, they first of all had to live down their reputation. They wanted to lose their old reputation as the party of unemployment and the party of the elites. This is also the period of the end of rationing. Sylvie talked to us about rationing a little while ago. And of course the problem is that when the war suddenly ends, you cannot suddenly stop rationing because the war is ended, because there's not enough food production. And so rationing continued. Tea and sugar were rationed until 1952. And meats and bacon were rationed until 1954. So for 9 years after the war, meat and bacon were still rationed. That was quite hard for people, yeah? They didn't get much meat for all that time after the war. And as you can imagine, in England, if you ration tea, that's really bad news, you know? Terrible, terrible news. One of the first controversies was about the nationalisation of sugar. I'm not really good at this, am I? The nationalisation of sugar. This was a big debate. Sugar was a big industry. But they decided not to nationalised sugar, and it's an interesting debate because the sugar industry didn't, the bosses of the sugar industry did not want to be nationalised, and they had a big campaign. On every packet of sugar there was a slogan against nationalisation, and they invented a character, Mr. Cube, who was a cube of sugar, with arms and legs, which spoke and explained how nationalisation was very bad. So that was one of the atmosphere of the time. From the point of view of nationalisation, of course, conservative parties in general are against nationalisation. That's a part of conservatism. So certainly the conservatives did not want to continue nationalising more industries. If the Labour Party had won, they would probably have nationalised some more industries, including sugar. However, the Conservative Party did not reverse the nationalisation of coal, electricity, gas, and so on. Now, the economy was going tremendously well, and in particular, we can see this is the detailed meaning of the expression les Trente Glorieuses. 1960 to 1965. Yes. Yes. No, that's not such a good example. Yes. Let's say that the spending on education and pensions for old people and unemployment benefit grew very quickly. Unemployment was below 3% for 25 years. This was really the Trente Glorieuses. I remember my father being treated badly by his boss and leaving immediately. He says, I'm not working for you anymore. And finding a new job 3 days later. Yeah. Don't do this. It doesn't work anymore. Okay, you can do it if you're sure, but think about it first anyway. However, the economy was going well for all the countries, and by 1951, only 6 years after the war, the economic growth in West Germany was higher than Britain's. So very quickly, Britain was no longer the most powerful economy, even in Europe. Now, West Germany had a kind of advantage, because they were not allowed to spend a lot of money on the military. That was the terms of the treaty. And so they had more money to invest in science and technology and industry. There were some attempts to reduce the welfare state. The Conservative government, they understood that they had to keep most of the welfare state, but they still tried to reduce some bits of it. For example, they wanted to introduce, in 1958, they wanted to introduce a payment for every day you spend in hospital. Vous savez qu'en France, il y en a le forfait journalier. Si vous restez 5 jours à l'hôpital, vous devez payer 5 fois. Je ne sais pas ce que c'est, hein, c'est 20 ou 30 euros, quelque chose dans le genre, je crois. And in Britain, of course, this was free and is still free, I think, I'm pretty sure. But in 1958, the Conservative Chancellor, the Ministry of Finance, said, oh, yes, it would be a good idea if we introduced a boarding fee for hospitals and if we end family allowance for the second child. Now in Britain, and I think it's the same in France, you get family allowance, allocation familiale, not for the first child, nothing for the first child. You get a family allowance for the second child and for the third child. And in 1958, the Conservative government said, let's abolish for the second child. Okay? But inside the Conservative government, there was a debate, and this plan did not happen. But it shows that there was ideas, there was always a desire to reduce it. Even before that, in 1951, the Rowntree Report examined the situation of the British population from the point of view of poverty. And according to Rowntree, in 1931, 30% of the British population were poor, and in 1951, only 3%. So this is 30% of the working class. 30% of the working class, 30% de la classe ouvrière en 31 et 3% en 51. Now, today we think this is probably an exaggeration. We think he was exaggerating, but nevertheless, the difference was enormous. Maybe the difference wasn't 10 times less. Maybe it was only 5 times less. But an absolute massive retreat of poverty. Now, this doesn't mean there are no poor people. The 3% were very poor. But nevertheless, an enormous change. The economy is booming. This is the time when people have inside toilets, perhaps a washing machine. My mother got her first washing machine in 1964, yeah, with her third child. Yeah. So for the first child, no washing machine. Yeah, it's not. But I have to say, most people were richer than us. Okay, yeah, that was what it was like at the time. Yeah. Other big changes, education and universities. School was now from 5 years old till 15 years old. In the 1950s, you were obliged to go to school from 5 years old to 15 years old. And interestingly enough, the Conservative government often said, oh, we must reduce this, it's too much. 6 to 14 is enough. But this was politically impossible. They didn't dare to do it. And also, it gradually became the case that even the elite were realizing in the new economies of the 1950s, we need more education. Why? Well, because the car industry, the chemical industry, plastics. You know, plastic, 1950s is the time of plastics. Plastics it tremendously transform. It's also a good design time. This is a 1950s chair. This design, this particular design, was invented in the 1950s. Very influential. We still use them today. The 1950s was really an amazing time for creative design. But let's say that because of the plastic industries and the new construction materials for housing, the aeroplane industry, very beginnings of the computer industry, even the elite realized, oh, actually, we need people to be more educated because otherwise our industries will not have the people they need. And so the number of people in universities went through the roof. In 1900, there were 20,000 students in university. Most of them were at Oxford or Cambridge, and 20,000, a small elite were at university. In 1950, 85,000. In 1956, 1956, 90,000. In 1962, 120,000. And 120,000 is 8% of the age group. Yeah, that is if you take young people who are 18 years old, 8% went to university. Now, 8% was still low by international standards. 8% was less than Germany, Japan, etc. So the elite were trying to raise it. So it was rising very quickly, but this meant new universities. Even the Conservative government understood they needed new universities. Now, the universities made life very much better for young adults because it's more, although going to university is not always a lot of fun, it's more fun than being apprenticed in a coal mine. Okay, this is what people were really doing at the time. My father left school at 14 in 1947. And a very interesting story, actually, because the last week in school, he went to the careers advice person, conseiller d'orientation, and said, what do you want to do? I don't know. Do you want to be a gas fitter? Okay. You start on Monday. You're an apprentice gas fitter. Now, he didn't know what it was, which is interesting, because he didn't think he should ask what it was. He wasn't expecting a very exciting job. Yeah. A gas fitter, c'est installer le gaz chez les gens, et installer le chauffage chez les gens. Which is not a lot of fun, because you have to go under the floorboards, and try not to make the whole place explode, and things like that. But that's an interesting thing. It's two things. First of all, that a lot of the working class didn't have a lot of ambition. And of course, there are still plenty of people with no ambition. But in general, much more people today try to thought, well, you know, j'ai eu que le bac, mais je vais voir si je trouve quelque chose. Yeah, there was a desire. Whereas the tradition was, oh, well, I'll do what my father did. Yeah. Now, that was the tradition. Yeah. Now, my father's father was worked in a factory, and he didn't want to work in a factory. My father decided to join the Navy at one time, la Marine. And he went home and he said to his parents, I've decided to join the Navy. And they said, you're not joining the Navy. Because, in fact, they hated the army, but dad didn't know. Strange story. In any case, that was changing in the 1950s. I'm not here to tell you my family's life story. New universities. So in 1961, there was the foundation of 7 new universities. Uh, including York and Kent. These are important universities today. By 1968, there were 56 universities altogether. So a massive expansion of, and this will continue. This will continue. I don't know what is the percentage of young people in university today, but it's much higher, of course. Let's look then at housing. The situation was still pretty bad. The Labour government had begun to build new houses, but the need was for, probably in 1945, they needed 10 million new houses. Now, it's impossible to build 10 million in a year. They built 200,000 or 300,000 every year. For example, this is just a sign of how serious the situation is. In 1952, 2 million dwellings were shared by two or more families. That is to say, it was very common to have a family who just had two rooms and another family who had the other two rooms. And at the same time, you have to remember, of course, that people had four, five, six, seven, eight children, large numbers of children. So there was a terrible situation there. And the Conservative Party were very active in this, because in 1953, for example, they built 318,000 new houses. These are not all public housing. Some of it is private companies building houses, but assisted by the government. They say, okay, no tax on new houses or something like that. And in 1954, I think it's the record, 1954, 357,000. And also, they introduced rent control. Rent control, that is to say, that the government decided on the maximum rent. Le loyer était limité par la loi. Tremendously important law, which meant that people who were not eating enough could eat enough. You know, really very, very basic stuff. And they made a lot of noise about it. In 1953, the minister, Harold Macmillan, he was not yet prime minister, but he was minister of something. And he had a big public ceremony for the keys of the 300,000th house this year. Because this is politics, yeah? If you're a government and you build 300,000 houses, that's good. Or you make them, have them built. But of course, you want everybody to know. That's politics. And so they had a public thing. Here is Mr. Smith. And I'm very proud to say that the number 300,000 of the house is Mr. Smith's house. And here are the keys, Mr. Smith. Smile for the camera. Yeah? Which is, c'est de bonne guerre. Now, the kind of houses that they built is an interesting point as well. That in general, they built little houses, not flats. That is appartement, des maisons. And this is the classic stereotype of the little English house with a little garden. And you know, all the same, all identical. Now, there are two things, all identical, because if you build them all identical, they are cheaper. It's cheaper to build 100,000 identical houses than 100,000 different houses. Now, of course, it's quite amusing, the lines of identical houses. And if you look at Asterix chez les Bretons, then he makes a lot of jokes about this. On the other hand, the small house with the small garden was really a tremendous step forward for ordinary people in England. The idea that everybody should have a small garden was actually a very democratic idea, rather than the high-rise flats, for example. Although it allowed the French to mock the English, it was actually a fairly progressive idea. Let's stay on then the 1950s and 1960s from the point of view of the welfare state. The Conservative government did not destroy the welfare state. They continued it. So let's look at the question of pensions. People were already beginning to live longer. We have now antibiotics. Cancer is still a terrible thing in the, it's still a terrible thing today, but today 50% of people who get cancer are okay afterwards, 50%. Whereas in the 50s and 60s and 70s, cancer, you thought, oh, you've got cancer, okay, goodbye. It was nice to know you. So pension, so people are living longer, and pensions, les allocations retraite, were much higher. So for example, in 1936, 1.8 million workers had works pensions. Donc en 36, 1,8 million de travailleurs, de salariés avaient des plans retraite dans leur entreprise. And in 1956, there are 8 million. Important difference there. So a tremendous difference. This meant that old people could live in their own house. Whereas before in the 30s, when you're old you can't work anymore, oh well, you have to go and live with your children. Although I'm sure you think that your parents living with their children would be okay for them, I can assure you that it wouldn't. Okay. This is also the 1950s. More and more people are working in offices. Fewer and fewer people are working in factories. In the factories, the machines are coming in to make life easier. Now, this is a process. Working conditions getting easier is a process which continues for many, many decades. Just to give you one example, I'm sure you see very frequently outside your home the people who come to take the rubbish away, and they have these plastic bins with wheels, and they pull the wheels and they put them at the back, and a machine goes and empties it. Yeah. Now, when I was 8 or 9 or 10, that when they came, the bins were in metal, and they picked them up and carried them and emptied them. Yeah. Now that's an interesting point, because even when I was young, they had invented the wheel. Yeah. The wheel was not a new invention. So why were there no wheels? And it would not be, even in 1965, it's not so difficult to have this machine that goes and empties it. It's not advanced technology. So why was work so hard? And the answer is, nobody cared. Or certainly the bosses of the companies didn't care. Their priority was not to make working conditions easier. And so partly the welfare state, partly the trade unions, but the whole atmosphere of what is acceptable has been risen. Now this is not universally the case. There are some places where working conditions are still very bad. Building construction is the worst of working conditions even today. But nevertheless, there has been a general trend to improve working conditions. And this was already going on in the 1950s when more and more people worked in offices. Now, of course, it can be very boring to work in an office. But in general, rather than building things on a production line in a factory, it's generally preferable. Let's have a little look. We're still looking then at the 1950s and the Conservative government looking at health. I write health there just to say that nothing really changed. Nothing really changed. So in 1958, you get the 10th anniversary of the NHS, and everything was still free. So, a surprise, but an important change. Next week I'm going to look at industry and on cultural changes and the debate on the death penalty and the Suez crisis, a very, very important crisis in 1956. But I'm going to stop there for today. Remember, before next week, it would be excellent.